So we finished talking about the truth of dukkha, the First Noble Truth, and its four aspects of impermanence, dukkha, empty, and selfless. And now we're going to go into the four attributes of true origins. So when we talk about the origin of cyclic existence, meaning cyclic existence here, not meaning this world, but meaning our five aggregates under the influence of ignorance and aversions and karma. Here, the origin, why do we have this body and mind that are polluted by ignorance, that are subject to dukkha? Well, it's due to karma, which is we create due to our mental afflictions, attachment, ignorance, jealousy, anger, and so forth. And where do those afflictions come from? They come from ignorance. Okay? So ignorance is the root of the origin, and then also afflictions and karma. Okay? When we go through the four attributes of true origins, the example that we're going to be using of the origin is craving. Okay. So craving is a particular mental factor. We find it, for example, in the 12 links of dependent origination. It's the eighth link. Okay. And there's three kinds of craving. One is for sense objects. I want this, I want that's hot. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. Okay, so this is a craving for sense objects. The second kind of craving is called the craving for existence. And what this means is craving to be born in the meditative absorptions of the form realm and the formless realm. Okay, our realm is called the desire realm, because our minds are totally captivated by objects of the five senses. So that craving is the first craving. But there's two other realms of existence. One is called the form, and one is called the formless realm. In the form realm, we have actualized the jhanas, or the Sanskrit term is dhyana, the meditative stabilizations in which you can abide single-pointedly on an object. And there's four levels of the jhanic absorptions. And if we cultivate those as a human being, but we don't have renunciation of samsara, then we can be born in that particular form realm in the future life and stay there for a long time. But after the karma to be born there is consumed, then we fall down to the desire realm. The same thing happens in the formless realms, except the formless realm beings are even more subtle, and they don't have a body. Yeah, they just have the four mental aggregates. And when they are born, when you're a human being and you generate those levels of meditative absorption, which are very deep levels, then if you don't have renunciation and wisdom, then you get born in the formless realm of absorptions. And at that time, you're just totally spaced out on one object. Sometimes the object is space, it could be infinite space, infinite consciousness, nothingness, and then neither discrimination or non-discrimination. And you're just spaced out in those absorptions, which are very blissful, but the mind is still in samsara. So when that karma is used up, then you fall down. One of my teachers, Tibetan teachers, they took him to the top of the Eiffel Tower in France, and he said that that was like going to the form and formless realm absorptions. It's very beautiful, but afterwards the only way to go is down. Yeah. So it's really unsatisfactory in the end. But when we're attached to rebirth in the form and formless absorptions, because those kinds of meditative states are so pleasant, then that's called the craving for existence. So that's the second kind of craving. So it's still craving for existence within samsara. And then the third kind of craving is the craving for to be free from unpleasant states. Okay? So this may be in a very gross way. You know, we have an itch due to a mosquito bite, we crave to be free of that. Or it could be even in a more subtle way. For example, people who have wrong views and think that there's only this life and they're suffering in this life, so they crave to be free from that suffering. And they think that when they die, then they will be free of suffering. So it's a very nihilistic view, this craving for the diminishment of unpleasant states. But you can see, still, the mind is captivated by craving. The mind's not peaceful. It's wanting something to be different than the way it is. Okay? So these three kinds of craving are, you know, when we're speaking of craving as an example, when we're talking about the true origins. So the first quality of true origins is craving and karma are the causes of dukkha because they are its root, and due to them, dukkha constantly exists. Okay, so by contemplating this, we gain deep conviction that all dukkha and the three kinds of dukkha all have causes. You know, and those causes are craving and karma, or put in a different way, ignorance, afflictions, and karma. Okay? So this, understanding this, that ignorance and craving are the causes of dukkha, this counteracts the wrong view of people who are materialists, who think that the cause of suffering comes from outside. Okay? So some of these materialists don't believe in rebirth, or some of them don't think our karma, that our actions has an ethical dimension. So they think, oh, you can do whatever, and it doesn't have any effect. Yeah? Except, you know, maybe what you see now. So their viewpoint becomes, do whatever you want, that you like, just don't get caught. Okay? But as we know, being Buddhists, that even if you don't get caught by the police in this life, our karma will ripen in suffering in the future. Okay? So this particular one saying that craving and karma are the causes of dukkha because they are its root, and due to them dukkha constantly arises. This overcomes that wrong view. Okay? So it's a very important wrong view to overcome, because lots of times, if we're not careful, we think our problems come from outside. Yeah. When we're unhappy, why, you know, somebody says, why are you unhappy? You don't say, because I created negative karma in a previous life and it's ripening now. Yeah, you don't say that, do you? Somebody says, why are you happy? And you say, I don't have what I want. No, I want praise and this person's blaming me. I want to be acknowledged for all the hard work I do and everybody's ignoring me. So, you know, in our ordinary way, our minds aren't really totally convinced that our misery comes due to craving and karma. Because constantly we're blaming other sentient beings. All the time. Aren't we? Aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah? God, somebody answered. Hooray! So, you know, to really think about this in our life, lives, how easily, constantly, we are blaming other people and saying that other people are the causes of our problem. And if only we could be free of these obnoxious other people, then we would be happy. Or only if everybody would follow our wonderful, wise advice and change and become what we want them to be, then we would be happy. Do you think like that? No? Oh, one person who's exceptional. I think like that. Yeah? When somebody's doing something I don't like, yeah, my first thought isn't, oh, they're overwhelmed by afflictions and karma. My first thought is, they're wrong. They should do and change and do things the way I want them to do. Oh, you look shocked. It's true. Yeah, this is the first thought that comes to my mind. Yeah, after I practice the Dharma and change my thought, then I realize, oh, that person is not the cause of my misery. You know, I did something negative in a previous life, and it's ripening now. Then I calm down. But as long as I'm blaming other people, I just want them to change. And I'm going to be mad until they change. But when I'm like that, I give up my own power and I'm actually miserable. I think it's very important when we're Buddhists to admit our negative states of mind. Sometimes we get into this thing of, you know, I've got to appear to be a good Buddhist. Yeah. I had this when I first ordained, when I was a baby nun, and I thought I'd have all these, you know, afflicted mental states, and I thought, oh, if people knew what was going on in my mind, they would be horrified. So much attachment, so much anger, jealousy, you know, arrogance, laziness, all sorts of things. And I thought, if people knew what was going on, they would be horrified. So I thought, I've got to be a good Buddhist. For me, I don't get angry. you need something. Here, let me give it to you. Aren't I compassionate and sweet? So I put on a good show because I didn't want people to know what was really going on inside here. Because I thought they would be horrified to know what a lousy nun I was. But you know that didn't work. You put on a show for a while and then eventually you have to get honest with yourself. Yeah. And I had to get honest and I had to say, look, all these negative thoughts and emotions are in my mind, and you know, I've got to do something about them and stop pretending to be, you know, this sweet ideal. You know, we have lots of English terms, slang terms for somebody who puts on those, but I don't think you can translate them. Do you have Vahasa terms for somebody who's trying to look sweet and good and angelic?
Jayus, maybe. Jaim.
Jaim.
We call it jaga image. Jaga means to keep yourself. Image means your self-image. So we have the slang called jaim. You try to look good.
Oh, yeah.
You pretend, but actually deep inside.
Something else is going on inside, yeah.
Jaim, yeah? Yeah. So the Mixuni knows better than me.
Yeah. So I had to learn to be transparent and to admit my afflicted states of mind. Because if I don't admit them, then how am I going to change them? Yeah? And just because I have afflicted mental states, it doesn't mean I'm a bad nun. You know? Because why did I become a nun? I became a nun because I had afflicted mental states and I wanted to do something about them. So putting on robes doesn't mean that you're all of a sudden perfect. It means that you're trying to work with your mind. But I used to have so much advice for other people. You know, all these obnoxious people. Do you mean a lot of obnoxious people?
Sorry?
Obnoxious people.
Obnoxious.
What's another word for obnoxious? Rude, inconsiderate. They say all sorts of things that are unpleasant. They make problems. Yeah, people who stir up trouble.
We have the word in Bahasa.
Yeah.
Menyebalkan.
Ooh.
Menyebalkan.
Menyebalkan. Menyebalkan. Okay. So all those people who are menyebalkan. Then we have so much advice for them. Oh, you should be calmer. You should be more polite. Yeah. You should realize that I'm superior to you. You should treat me well. You should realize that all your problems are due to your karma. They're not due to me. Okay, so all those people who are menyebalkan, I'm going to forget that. I'll have to practice it. Okay, so this first aspect, you know, has to do with that.
Oh, the computer just did what it went back to the beginning of the file.
This computer is the cause of my problems. You see, we blame everything. Everything but our own karma. Yeah. Everything but our own afflicted mental states we blame. Okay, then the second one is craving and karma are the origins of dukkha because they repeatedly produce all the diverse forms of dukkha. Okay? So, this indicates that our dukkha comes from a diversity, many, many different kinds of factors, okay? That our misery, our suffering, our dukkha doesn't come just from one factor, but from many, many factors. We have ignorance, we have craving, we have afflictions, we have karma. Other people are external conditions, but they're not really the cause. Okay. And so our afflictions and karma are really the root of all of our dukkha, not just some of it. It's not that, you know, some of my problems are due to other people and some are due to my dukkha. You know, but at the end of the day, we trace everything back to our own mind. And I think this is a very profound point of Buddhism that other religions do not share. And that is that the cause of our suffering is not external, but it's in our own mind. Yeah. And if the cause of our misery is in our own mind, and if it's based on ignorance, which is a wrong view, and ignorance can be corrected by gaining the right view, then all this dukkha can be eliminated. Okay. If the origin of our dukkha were in an external creator, you know, some kind of God who created things, or some kind of cosmic substance, you know, that we all came from, then there would be nothing to do, because somebody else or something else would be in charge. But because ignorance and craving, afflictions and karma are the actual cause of all of our dukkha, and those things exist in our own mind, then we can do something to oppose them. We cannot control other people, but we can do something about our own state of mind. Okay. And so here it becomes very important to understand that ignorance can be eliminated. Okay, so how does that argument go? Okay, so ignorance we've been discussing is the root because it produces the afflictions which lead to the karma, which lead to the rebirth. Okay. Ignorance misapprehends the nature of reality. So it is an active grasping at things to exist in the opposite way from how they do exist. So things exist dependently, they depend on other factors, but ignorance thinks that things exist independently, with their own essence, from their own side, under their own power. Okay, so ignorance is this wrong kind of grasping. Since ignorance is not based on the reality of the situation, if we can generate a mind that understands the reality, then that mind is going to counteract ignorance. Because you can't misapprehend reality and apprehend reality correctly at the same time. And if there's a conflict between ignorance, which misapprehends reality, and wisdom, which knows reality correctly, which one is going to win? It's going to be the wisdom, because it's the correct consciousness. So wisdom can always overpower ignorance. Ignorance can never overpower wisdom. Okay. So because things are not inherently existent, because they are empty, because they are selfless, therefore generating the wisdom that knows them as they truly are, the real mode of existence, can overpower the ignorance. And so that's why cultivating true paths works to bring about true cessations. So this is very, very important to understand. Otherwise we might just say, oh, ignorance is the source of suffering. But what to do, you know? I can't do anything about ignorance. Yeah, that's not correct. We can uproot our ignorance. We are not inherently ignorant. We are not inherently selfish. We are not inherently angry. All these things are based on wrong views and can be eliminated by gaining the right view. So understanding that opens the door for us to see this tremendous potential in our life. That we really can become fully liberated, fully awakened. It is possible. And we can know this not just through blind belief and not just because the Buddha said so, but because of thinking about it and using this kind of reasoning to prove that to ourselves. Okay? So things based in correct reasoning cannot be disproved, and we can have full confidence in them. And based on that kind of confidence, we generate very strong faith in the three jewels. And that kind of faith that comes through really thinking about things and understanding how things exist using reasoning, that kind of faith is very stable. Whereas blind faith, or we have faith simply because we admire the Buddha and the Buddha said this, that kind of faith is not so stable. Because if somebody presents an opposing argument to what we think, we have no wisdom to rely on to know for ourselves exactly how things do exist. And thus other people can convince us of all sorts of wrong views. So that's why it's really important to think about the teachings we hear. Yeah? Just doing ceremonies, just saying mantra, just chanting, that alone will not bring us to liberation. We have to really think about the teachings. Yeah? Again, very firm conviction through reasoning and through our own experience. Mm-hmm. But we can do it. Okay. So that second one that says hating and karma are the origins of dukkha because they repeatedly produce all the different forms of dukkha, that lets us know that many causes are needed to produce something, and that things are not predestined. Okay? Buddhism does not believe in predestination. Very important. Very important. So you can see, as we're going into these characteristics of the Four Noble Truths, you can see the unique qualities of the Buddha's teachings as opposed to teachings from other teachers who are not Buddhists. We can begin to see this very clearly. Okay, then the third one is craving and karma are strong producers, because they act forcefully to produce strong dukkha. Okay? So this understanding dispels the wrong view that our dukkha is due to what they call discordant causes. In other words, something that doesn't have the power to produce dukkha. Okay? A discordant cause. Okay, if you have a pomegranate? A durian.
Oh, durian.
You have a durian.
Yeah, a durian.
Okay.
Delima.
Delima.
The fruit that just...
Oh, the pomegranate?
Yeah, we have delima.
The delima. Okay. So, the cause of pomegranate is not a durian seed.
Bukan benih durian.
Okay? So we say a durian seed is a discordant cause. It doesn't concord with the result of the pomegranate. Okay? So in the same way, the people, the religions that assert an external creator, we say that's a discordant cause for dukkha. Because from a Buddhist viewpoint, there is no external creator. The Buddha did not create dukkha. The Buddha did not create the world. The Buddha did not create the Four Noble Truths. The Buddha did not create enlightenment. The Buddha described all of these things. Okay, through his wisdom, he described how things operate. If we assert some kind of external creator that created us, for example, you know how some religions say that God created human beings and so on. If you accept that kind of view, there are all sorts of logical problems. Because if there were an external creator, then we have to ask, why did that external creator create us? For what purpose? When I was a teenager, before I became a Buddhist, I had this question, and I would ask my friends from other religions, you say God created, but why? And nobody could give me a very good answer. Yeah. They would say, because God was lonely. But that's supposed to be perfect, and if you're perfect, you don't have a problem with
loneliness.
And then I thought, even if God created us, then why did he create us with so much ignorance and so much suffering? If God is all-powerful, he should have created us free of suffering and with wisdom and compassion. You know, what is the purpose of creating suffering beings? You know, I could not figure that out. And again, I asked different religious leaders, why did God create suffering? And they would say things like, so that we can learn from it. And then I'd say, well, why didn't God create us smarter in the first place? You know? So it doesn't make any sense to say there's an external creator who created suffering. Because also, if there were, then you have to ask, Who created the creator? And if you say, well, nothing created the creator already was, then that means the creator is permanent. It doesn't change. But something that is permanent cannot create, because creation involves change. So, you know, this is why when we examine these things with logic and reasoning, then we prove to ourselves that, you know, these kind of things cannot exist. Yeah? So it's not that we go around to our friends who believe in God and say, you know, what you believe is just stupid. That's not going to create religious harmony. And from a Buddhist viewpoint, this is also another unique quality of Buddhism. Buddhists, you know, say that it's very good that there's a diversity of religions. We don't all have to believe the same thing. Because if we all tried to force ourselves to believe the same thing, many people would be forcing themselves to believe something they didn't believe. And that doesn't help anybody at all. So from a Buddhist viewpoint, other religions all teach some good things. They teach ethical conduct. They say they teach us to be kind and compassionate to other people. So in this way, if somebody follows the belief of their religion, that teaches ethical kindness, you know, ethical conduct, kindness and compassion, that will benefit that person. So that religion is good. It's good that that religion exists because it meets the needs of that particular person. If that person tried to become a Buddhist, maybe it wouldn't work for them. Okay? So this kind of way of looking at things enables Buddhists to be very tolerant of people who have different views. And I think that's really important for us. And even within Buddhism, not everybody thinks exactly the same. Yeah? Even within Buddhism, we find a lot of variety. There's variety in meditation techniques, you know, lots of different things. So this is a sign of the Buddha's skill, you know, in being a teacher, the fact that he taught many, many different methods. Because people have different ways of thinking and different inclinations. And one method doesn't suit everybody. Okay? So when we see this diversity within Buddhism, we respect it because all these teachings came from the Buddha. And this is one thing that I really appreciate about Ekayana and Buddhayana and Mahasangha and what you're doing is that you're very respectful of the diversity that happens within Buddhism. Yeah. That's very important. And so similarly, when we go to meet people of other religions and engage in interfaith dialogue, to be very respectful, you know, of their beliefs, even though we don't agree. And even though we could refute their beliefs with reasoning, we don't do that because that fits that person. On the other hand, if a person comes to us and says, I used to believe that, but it doesn't make any sense to me anymore, teach me about Buddhism, then yes, by all means, we teach them the Dharma as much as we possibly can. Okay, then the fourth one says craving and karma are conditions of dukkha because they also act as the cooperative conditions that give rise to suffering. Okay? So this dispels the wrong view that things are fundamentally permanent but temporarily they change. Okay? Because sometimes we might think, like as a person, that, okay, well, I'm kind of permanent, but I change on a day-to-day basis. But I'm really permanent underneath all that. Okay? Yeah, sometimes we have these nutty thoughts. Yeah, but something can be both permanent and impermanent. It doesn't work. But our craving and our karma are the causes of our suffering, but they also form the conditions for our suffering. Okay? For example, we may have created some kind of karma under the influence of craving in a previous life, some negative karma. And that karmic seed is in our mind stream. And then, you know, it hasn't ripened yet, but it needs different external conditions or internal conditions to make that karmic seed ripen. And what happens is we see something that's really wonderful, our mind gets filled with craving, we want it, you know, and we go run after that thing that we want. And the fact of our running after that thing makes that other negative karmic seed ripen into a manifest craving. Okay?